Welcome to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. Unfortunately, we have no peace in Europe because the Russians have attacked us as they are the enemies and they must be defeated. Europe must be liberated from the Russian yoke, from the Russian energy yoke, from the corruption that comes from Russia, from the collusion and manipulation in the media that comes from Russia. And of course, Ukraine must be physically liberated from Russia. The Crimea must be liberated. And also the whole of Ukraine must be liberated and it must be faster. Therefore, we need to send the German Taurus missile, the Austrian tanks, and most of all the American weapons, because let's be honest, it's the biggest superpower in the world. And this very kind of laid-back contribution, minuscule contribution of America under the appeaser Chuck Sullivan, the National Security Council advisor, who is keeping America down and Russia up, is a real problem for the world. Of course, the Republicans are to blame as well because they are now again delaying and rejecting the Ukraine funding. In the Senate it's better, but in the House it's still very problematic. We need this funding. We in Europe gave already 140 billion. It's not enough. We have to add more. That's no doubt. Also for reconstruction, for the rearmament of Europe, for our defense obligation, for our own nuclear deterrent, which we need, and also for a massive victory campaign in Ukraine. And of course, for the integration of Ukraine in NATO and the EU. This is all very expensive and we will have to pay for it. But also American must be paid up. And I remind everybody that we are buying massively American weapons with European taxpayers, euros. And it's very good in a way, if you want to always discuss it in business terms. America is not harmed by helping Ukraine. On the contrary, it is, of course, important that the free world has a victory. American industry and, of course, the whole global system, depending on America, will very much profit. And I was invited by some American podcaster, Larry Sharp. It's on my Twitter feed, under G. Fehlinger in Twitter on X. And you can see a debate which I had for over an hour about the argument why America should support Europe, why NATO is important, why NATO should enlarge, and how we could save a lot of taxpayers' money by a strong NATO and how it kept peace. I think I was very intensive and inclusive in that one. I also made a kind of a presentation to the University of Odessa students. It's also online on my Twitter feed where I go extensively in that debate for Ukraine's victory, what Ukraine has to do. And I was in space as well on Twitter, which you can also download and listen to, where I go for all the arguments why we are at the most dangerous moment now in the 2 years since the start of the war and why we have to win now. Where is the big danger? Obviously now from the 12th of February towards, that's the Minsk Memorial Day, when in 2012 the Minsk Agreement was signed, towards the 16th of February, where it was broken again, to the 17th and 18th of February in 2015, where we have had this big massacre in Delbatseve in Ukraine, where basically Putin, after signing an armistice, he has broken it and he killed hundreds of Ukrainian soldiers in retreat. And that was, of course, a big act of revenge and it's unforgotten. And of course, then we have the 21st of February. And these are all important memorial days. In 2022, Putin has recognized the independence of these breakaway republics, his puppet regimes in Luhansk and Donetsk. And then there was also the Euromaidan massacre in 2014. So we then have the 24th of February, obviously the start of the full-scale invasion. And then we have the 26th of February with the Crimea annexation day. And then we have the 16th of March, where we have as well the memorandum day, this illegal fake referendum on the Crimea annexation, the Anschluss referendum, like 38, Putin has put it on the 16th of March. And on the 17th, obviously, there is the presidential elections in Russia. And that's, of course, where everything, that's the culminant, absolute climax of this most dangerous month ahead. And of course, we have the Kosovo Independence Day, the Serb National Day, 15th of February, 17th of February. And this will be very, very dangerous and fragile. I understand the Secretary of State of the United States is coming to Albania also to calm things down between Serbia and Kosovo to avoid war, which some in Russia and in Serbia are certainly planning. There was this botched assassination attempt against Mr. Kurti now in Skopje, and there is, of course, the effort to look for a casus belli. The Serb media, the Serb extremists are preparing that. I don't know if they will actually strike, because I hope, among others, my efforts, but more important, people in the world, and of course the American military must be prepared to strike Banja Luka and Belgrade in case of war, and they must make it before, very credible and loud, flying now over the Serb and Bosnian airspace in a threat posture which will deter Banja Luka and Belgrade to be acting against it, because what they want is the Anschluss of Republika Srpska to Serbia and of the north of Kosovo to Serbia. They have now one of these casus belli, the introduction of the euro. They seriously claim in the Serb media, Mr. Vulin and Vucic, that this is hurting the Serbs in Kosovo. I cannot understand. You know, we are not throwing euros at them and physically stone them by the euros. They have to have bank accounts, which they probably have in 2024. And the massive cash transactions driving the black economy, bringing dinars, the Serbian currency, out of Kosovo and in Kosovo, for the about 33,000 people who receive social pensions and welfare payment and subsidies and whatever else they receive in Kosovo from the Serbian state, they can pay it in euros as well. It's our common currency. So what the heck? You know, nobody is hurt by introduction of the euro. Actually, the Serbian dinar is pegged to the euro at 117. This is the big stabilization effort of President Vucic. So where's the heck? So this, to use this as a casus belli of physically threaten the livelihood of the Kosovo Serbs is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah? They will live much better if they're better integrated in the European economy by the euro. And this is the legal tender in Kosovo since the introduction of the euro 2002 in Kosovo, 22 years. And it's one of the reasons why Kosovo works much better than other economies in the region, because of the firm fundament of the euro. See, for example, Montenegro, they did the same and it works very well. And everybody is pegged to the euro in Bosnia, in Macedonia, in Serbia. The only one not, the Albanians. I was not 1 week in Albania to campaign for the euro for Albania. I do this since 5 years. Because, you know, they had, when I lived there, it was 140, 130 to the euro, and now it's 100 to 1. Yeah, basically, you can have a 1,000 lek, that's the currency of Albania, note, and it's 10 euros. Yeah, everybody accepts the euro now because it's easy to calculate and they can use it easily. So they make a little bit of benefit by accepting euros even. And so this is the situation. And, you know, there has been terrible for the export industry of Albania. It is terrible for the employment factor, and so about 1 million people have left Albania in the last 10 years of socialist misrule, which is now coming to the daylight. I always talked about it and I always knew it. But now the deputy prime minister, Armach Metaj, has asked for political asylum in Switzerland, Lugano, and makes very, very insightful interviews against Edi Rama. So the socialist system of 10 years in power is in completely collapse. But there is also no conservative opposition to speak of, because Mr. Berisha has lost all the support of the international community. Mr. Bashar doesn't have it as well. And there is complete chaos in the opposition. So probably the next prime minister will be Erjon Velia, which seems to be a decent left-wing, liberal, competent personality. Of course, also with his faults, but he seems to be the one who has support from the Albanian community and the voters. That's, of course, most important, and also from the international community and from the American embassy, and that's the European policy seems to back him. So let's work with him, and all the best, Erjon. He at least shared 3 of my tweets, and so I'm happy whenever, whatever. I hope he will not focus only on Tirana, because Tirana has really developed very well in the last years. It's like the New York of the Balkans. Follow my tweets on that one. I got a lot of like, but on Twitter. But it is, of course, deeply problematic that only the coast and Tirana are developing, and the north and the south and the interior of the cities and the country and the infrastructure development has basically come to a halt. on the Rama, and we lack the railways, we lack the highways, we lack, of course, a second port. And the energy infrastructure is not as good because I'm trying to get solar investors into Albania. And it's all not working as it should because of the lack of infrastructure. And of course, blame it on the EU. That's really true, because we should have done all the major efforts which we are now doing a decade too late. We should do that already in 2014, when Albania got the EU candidate status. Why didn't we put the hundreds and millions on the water, energy and road infrastructure, railway infrastructure that we do now under the stress of the Russian aggression? Now it's more happening under the Western Balkan Investment Initiative, but we could have done all of this before and it would have been much better. Yes, we lost a decade because of the weak leadership of Merkel and Obama, and it's a tragedy, and everything came to a halt with Putin rising from 2012 to now, but I guess he will fall soon. He seems to be very physically ill, according to the uncontrollable shivering feet he has already during the Tucker Carlson interview, a complete scandalous interview, by the way, where, you know, how to give a genocidal dictator so much global media space, and actually Carlson seemed to be paid for that one as well. And it's a complete outrage what he did, yeah, you know, to listen to Putin for 2 hours and not ask any questions, basically, and let him rant and ramble on the history of the 9th century, 13th century. You know, that is completely ridiculous form of a discussion. And of course, you know, when we Austrians would go back to the whatever 19th century, we could claim half of Europe, and let's go back to what Putin likes, Charles V, 16th century, we would basically have half of Europe. So it's a bit ridiculous. We have no ambitions for that. And by the way, Mr. Putin told us now, explained us that Ukraine is an invention of the Austrian general staff, probably the most incompetent general staff of any European army major power in history. As we all know, it was a complete disaster what they have plotted for. So the idea that Ukraine was invented by Austria seems to be a bit ridiculous, and to tell this to the global audience in a Tucker Carlson interview seems to be totally out of context. And this is not journalism, this is pure propaganda. And Tucker Carlson is in a good tradition of this famous American journalist who told us that the Russian Revolution is very good, or the Holodomor doesn't exist, or all this kind of whitewashing of Uncle Joe, and all these things which were useful for some in the US, and for this journalist, they probably got paid for that. But in reality, they did a lot of damage. Because imagine a world without Lenin taking power in the Soviet Union, or establishing the Soviet Union, would have been, of course, much more peaceful and much better. Because let's not forget also the rise of fascism in Europe in the 20s and 30s was definitely a result of the Soviet Union complete extremism to kill basically the whole educated elite and destroy the country in outrageous manner, with complete brutality in the Civil War and afterwards. And it was definitely also a result of the completely failed laissez-faire capitalism and the lack of economic responsibility for global governance of the new superpower of the world, of the United States of America, in the 1920s. By their protectionism, by their xenophobia, by their lack of global responsibility, by not going into the League of Nations after intervening in the First World War, and this completely lack of American leadership in the 1920s, and the extreme violence of the Soviet Union, are then the result why fascism could ever develop and also grow so big to come to power in Germany and Italy, to major countries, and then lead to complete destruction in the Second World War, where both these powers, the Soviet Union and America, had to intervene then to kill that fascist monster. And then they had, of course, then the situation where the Soviet Union was staying in Europe, and America consequently had to stay in Europe, create NATO. And I explain all these things very well in Larry Shep, a podcast. Please listen to that. Now we are in the mess again, basically we the free world fighting with Russia in Ukraine, and they are the aggressors. And when you want to see a completely confused worldview, then you listen to Putin's worldview, where according to Putin, the Polish are responsible for everything. And that was refuted by the Polish Minister of Foreign Affairs very consistently already on Twitter. I recommend to follow my timeline, because I have shared all these important developments and responses in my very intensive timeline, actually. Yes, good. And this is the latest. You know, what I'm calling now, of course, is for deterrence. Avoid the new Balkan war. I call for massive armament of Ukraine to kick Russia's ass. And of course, the result should be that Putin has to manipulate the 17th of March elections very much. And this is the logic. And then there must be a Russian spring where Russia will hopefully go into full-scale revolution. The middle classes will rise against Putin. And there will be, so I do hope, and I'm actually kind of confident, as a result of the defeat of Putin's war in Ukraine, there should be then also the dismantlement of Russia. Because strategically, we don't need such a dangerous, toxic, aggressive power east of NATO and the EU. So Russia must be dismantled. And that is what I have explained already in this podcast many times. The Russian people have a right for freedom, self-determination. And that's what happened after the Russian Revolution with Finland, Poland and the Baltics. That was happened for Austrian, the people who were in that prison of nation. And of course, as well, in the prison of nation, Russia must be dismantled, and potentially China will follow, and others who are so evil that they attack others. China has not attacked anybody recently, but Russia has, and of course, Russia must be dismantled. And please follow my tweets for exactly how, when, and how many new countries will develop. Like in ex-Yugoslavia, it is much better now. And I know all the countries very well. I travel regularly, not so much to Serbia right now, because they beat up the people now. That's too dangerous for me. I'm not going to risk my physical integrity in a Serb secret service cell or going to Ukraine to fight. That's unfortunately not my capacity, my age and my ability. But I'm fighting here on Twitter, on my podcast, on my YouTube podcast, Pax Europiana, please follow it. But also here on my audio podcast. And please, that's what I can do as a contribution. Call for fast-track EU membership of North Macedonia, of Albania, Montenegro, the NATO allies. Call for NATO membership of Austria, Kosovo, Bosnia, and of course of Ukraine and Moldova and Georgia. And I'm calling obviously as well for EU membership of all NATO members, for the EU to join NATO, and of course also for more unity in the European Union and for the defeat and dismantlement of Russia. Because, you know, that's the logic. We are more united. Russia will be dismantled. That's the very simple logic. I'm also very active on Twitter with some Austrian activists who really are going in the Russian line. And what we also need, that we, after we have won this war, we have to purge internally all the Russian-funded trolls, agencies, and all these people who live off Russian money or who were treasonable during the war. They must be then punished by the law. We have to purge McCarthy-style our institutions from the Putin trolls and from the Putin agents, because they destroy the fundament of our society. They work with the enemy during wartime, and they are the internal enemy. So we definitely need to be very strict not to allow them in the public space anymore, and to punish them financially, and also according to the treason factor, also with the law, with the criminal code. Good. When I look around, what else is now important? I will keep you updated on all the things which I say. And you know, the Twitter has told me to restrain myself, because I called for the Russian soldiers to shoot their officers. Yeah, this is very normal. I call for revolution in Serbia and in Russia. And I call the Russian army to disobey the orders of their officers, like they have done in 1917. Yeah. Like they should have done in many occasions in the world. You cannot be the instrument of genocide. You remember the German army was the instrument of Hitler's genocide in Eastern Europe and in many other places. And that's, of course, a historic crime. So we cannot say this is a soldier. He has to obey the orders. Then you believe in the Waldheim kind of philosophy. I was just the officer. I was not responsible. Hitler ordered me. The army ordered me. I was a soldier. I had to kill. You know, if you think like that, then you don't call the Russians soldiers for mutiny. But I don't think that's the way we should, as a Western moral foreign policy act, we should call the, we should explain them. And Schwarzenegger, in a wonderful, wonderful video, which I recommend you to listen, has made a wonderful call for the Russians to disobey and to end this war. And I call, and I just to make it consequently more in written, more clearer, I call the Russian soldiers to shoot the officers. And I think that's what they should do. And of course, it's very risky, but anyhow, they will die because the Putin has put about 400,000 of his citizens into this death in Ukraine, because our technology is ultimately lethal and this is much more advanced. And you know, as I said now so many times, I know the Russians are putting their last stand together, and in Avdiivka it's very hard, and they have this tank army they want to put to Ukraine, to Kharkiv. And, you know, maybe they will have some successes now because Jack Sullivan, the appeaser, is hindering Western American and American arms effort. But, you know, ultimately there is no doubt about the outcome of this war, because we are 50 trillion and they are 1 trillion, 1.5 maybe. The numbers what they always share about economic success in Russia is totally ridiculous, yeah. They are down to 1 trillion, we are at 50 trillion, we are growing quite well. So we have the technology, we have the will to fight, we have the fiscal capacities, and Russia cannot win a long war. We will do what it takes to win, and we will fund Ukraine as long as it takes. We will do all the necessary investments, and it will take a little bit longer. I'm also very critical to Jack Sullivan's and the appeasers of the world who have already led us into this war. Imagine Jack Sullivan. You know, he's the security advisor. He's of the American president. His task is to avoid wars. That's his task. Yeah? He has completely failed. I cannot see what kind of arrogance he has to stay in power. I mean, this is outrageous. Yeah. The guy has failed to avoid the Ukraine war, has failed to avoid the Israel war, and has failed to avoid the Houthi war. And I'm sure in the framework of the very difficult months, the Russians have surprised us, will prepare more surprises, more wars to come from North Korea, Venezuela, the Balkans, in Bosnia, and so on and so on. I forgot the Azeri attack on the breakaway region in Aktash. So, yeah, it's 4 wars under Chuck Sullivan's reign, and he is not winning anywhere. He's the complete loser. I mean, and he has, under his watch, the worst period of the war. I mean, then he doesn't resign, or is not replaced by the president. I lack any understanding for this. He's a completely incompetent fool. Yeah. Anyhow, very sad story. Yeah. Okay, good. Then we hope that this next month will not be as bad as I foresee it, but I think it will be. So prepare yourself. What we need to do, not individual violence, please, my friends, the Kosovo Albanians in Kosovo, stay calm. We need the state to prepare, the state institutions need to prepare the security, and they must obviously also send the arms and prepare themselves, buy the equipment that's necessary, the Javelins in Kosovo, very good. The Bayraktars in Kosovo, very good. Also in Bosnia, we must be deterring in the extension of the Russian war into the Balkans. And of course, we must win the war in Ukraine, because this is the most decisive battle now in our post-World War II history since the Vietnam War. We are in this decisive moment. The 70s were a disaster. And the 80s, we were rising again, and then we were reluctant and complacent to really invest in our security. But if we win now in Ukraine, the next 30 years will be a very good year for everybody in the free world and for everybody on this planet, but for the autocrats, because they will be in defeat and retreat. And the next 30 years of globalization will be very successful. We will double the GDP in the next 30 years and to $200 trillion. We will have more people on the world, probably 10 billion people on the world from 8 to 10. We will hinder all this export of violence and mercenaries from Russia, because Russia will be in civil war defeat and dismantlement, and hopefully peacefully, but maybe not completely. So they will be busy with themselves. They cannot export their warriors and their mercenaries towards the Sahel zone and towards Syria and towards Ukraine anymore, because they will be all back in Russia. There will be no money for international investing in the Republican Party on the side of Russia. And this is what's going on since 2008. Let's never forget. And the Russians have put massive amount in Western politics. They have put massive amount in disasters, mercenary actions in Africa. And all these things will no longer happen. So the next 30 years will be bright if we win. Imagine one moment if we lose. And then we have more wars to come, and Putin is celebrating his victory. It will be a terrible world. Does anybody want to live in a Putin-G world? We see that, what kind of horrors they provide to the people in the occupied territories of Ukraine. This is a scenario, a reality for them, of torture and of exploitation of human suffering nobody can really want. And all these people in America who say that, oh, it's not our war, always when you withdraw from Europe and the world, you will have to come back, and it's 10 times more expensive to come back. Yeah? NATO is like insurance policy. It's much cheaper, it's much better, and it's much more rational. And we are paying up, and we are also investing in our own security, Poland especially. Mr. Trump gives these outrageous comments. Yeah? And just, you know, let me conclude. We really have all to make an effort that Trump is not elected. I hope the courts will ban him. I hope Nikki will win. I hope that Biden wins against Trump if he really runs. But the best solution would be Nikki Haley to win the Republican primary at the convention. She must stay in the race, and she must definitely win. And that is the much better world. We need an American leader ready to win and not to contain, just appease Russia and China, but one ready to win. I think Nikki Haley is the person. Yes, that's my little rambling here at the morning Sunday. I say thank you very much. I shouldn't do podcasts longer than half an hour. This is the moment. Please follow me also on my audio, also on my YouTube podcast. I have made a lot of videos. I show you also the beauty of the Balkans and of Europe, and many videos there, 2,600. Here more over 300 podcasts on my audio feed, and 150,000, I think it's tweets on my tweet, on my X account, and more to come on my articles. Follow me, Google me, work with me and support our issues. Peace in Europe by deterrence, by strength, by unity, by a strong EU, by a strong NATO, by a strong free trade agreement, by the flat tax of 15%, by free trade agreements, and by lower regulations, better regulations, European regulation, and of course by a strong unity between the United States of America, a kind of a common market of the West. This is what we need. The OECD extended, and of course Serbia contained. Regime change in Serbia and in Russia is key. Freedom for the people of Russia, freedom for the people of China, freedom for all people in the world, based on individual freedom and collective security and European style regulation. And that's the way, via the WTO, the OECD, and decency, based on good governance, low taxes, care for taxpayer money, but security prepared before, because ultimately such wars are much more expensive than prior, the decent deterring capacity, and of course technology to move forward, to provide us for a world of 200 trillion with 10 million people, a much richer world, also where the benefits are shared more equally by membership in OECD, World Trade Organization, and of course where it possible NATO and EU, and simply to be part of the free trade system. America to make more free trade green systems, and of course less xenophobic, anti-foreigner populism, but decent openness for goods, for persons, for ideas. That's the basis of innovation. That's the basis of progress. It's openness. That's the basis of innovation, prosperity, and of progress. And that's what we have achieved a lot. in the secure world, in the free world. But of course, our enemies from Iran, North Korea, and Russia, basically the inheritance of the Stalin and Ayatollah extremism, they are active and they are also competent. And we have to be more active, more united to defeat them. Thanks a lot for listening. And please watch some of my other things, especially I like this Larry Shape discussion. And there is more to come from Pax Europiana for peace in Europe, based on unity, strength, freedom, and of course, transatlantic values. Thanks a lot. Bye.